Welcome on this Wednesday before Thanksgiving. As you join with your family to give thanks to God for what we as a nation have received, and that's something that's unique about America, isn't it? We're talking about American exceptionalism. Well, this is a tradition that goes back to when America truly was exceptional. The exception to the rule. A country that was grateful for the blessings that we'd been given by God. I don't think that we have that kind of exception anymore. I want to give you a couple of examples, and then we're going to talk in just a moment in the next segment. We're going to talk about some of the history and what that tells us about the doublethink on immigration, what it tells us about where this country is headed. But this is a story that came out about a week or so ago. If you remember this, government denies homeless people food by raiding a charity and pouring bleach on the food. Why? Because they didn't get the government's permission. This is reported by the Freethought Project. I mentioned it briefly. It's out of Kansas City, Missouri. I mentioned it briefly last week. Earlier this month, the kind folks over at Free Hot Soup Kansas City hosted a picnic. But the government took exception to that. They seized the food, they poured bleach all over it, and the homeless people who were expecting it went hungry that day. And here's the amazing thing that was said by the mayor. He said, regarding the incident involving Free Hot Soup, rules are there to protect the public health, and all groups must follow them. No exceptions. No exceptions. Now, the other people there said, these are my friends. Everyone there felt a sense of community. We're a community of people who feel that it's their passion to share with the most vulnerable people in our community. Well, let's talk about compassion. As George Washington said, government is not compassion. It's not reason or eloquence. It's like force. And like fire, it is a fearful servant, a dreadful master. And they will wipe out what you have if you don't get their permission. No exception. No exception. As I pointed out, my daughter, on a weekly basis, provides food, works at a charity that provides food to people. So far, this hasn't happened here, but it can happen anywhere. This is the America that we live in. This is not the America that was created by our founders. In the early 1800s, Alexis de Tocqueville came to America. He wrote a very lengthy treatise, Democracy in America. What he saw in America was an American civilization that was based on volunteerism. It was fundamentally Christian. It had a community that had compassion for other people, but they would organize themselves voluntarily to solve problems. We don't do that anymore. Instead, we have government as God. Government directs us. Government lays down the rules, and it can be completely arbitrary about how it enforces those rules. Another example, also from Freethought Project, in the wake of the fires in California, a billionaire who had just lost his winery, his co-owner of the Malibu Rocky Oaks Winery. He had spent a great deal of time trying to protect his winery. He had lost it, nevertheless. After he was unsuccessful in saving it, he decided that he would try to help other people. And so he and some friends got together, and they put a lot of supplies on their yachts. A group of volunteers loaded up his yacht with thousands of water bottles, hundreds of gallons of gasoline, snacks, dog food, lots of beer, other necessities. They headed up the coast, began making their way to Paradise Cove. When they got there, Paradise Cove, they were met by the L.A. County Sheriff's Department. Would not let them on shore. We're not letting in people by land. We're not letting them in by the sea. We've got rules. We've got rules. They said, charitable ventures be damned, essentially, is the comments from Freethought Project. Absolutely right. But you know what happened? The people of that community found out about it. They found out about it on social media, hashtag Malibu Hope. So the people got on surfboards and they started rowing out to the boats that were not allowed on shore. They got that to the people who needed it. That's the hope in America. We still have something left of a spirit of volunteerism. And we'll see if that can overcome the spirit of statism. Stay with us when we come back. We're going to talk about the origins of our country and of Thanksgiving.
Deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Well, Welcome on this Wednesday before Thanksgiving. I want to take a little bit of time and talk about Thanksgiving. Talk about the traditions of America, when America was exceptional, when we took time to thank God, something that, as far as I know, no other country still does. We may have forgotten what this is really all about as we enjoy the time that we have and the blessings that we have, the time with our family, the feasts, the shopping, and so forth. Do we really remember what America was founded on? You know, now we don't seek favor from God. We seek favor from government because they've intruded themselves into every aspect of our life. We live our lives at their command. Just as I was talking about in the previous segment, if you want to give food to other people, whether it's at a charitable organization, they may show up and just pour bleach all over the food. Or if there's a fire and you're trying to help people, they may not let you distribute the food. We've seen both of those things back in North Carolina where I was. We saw FEMA come in and turn people away who were trying to help after a hurricane at the coast. And then in another incident, as a tornado came through a community that was closer to us, it was inland, it wasn't a big enough disaster that the feds got involved. And so what happened in that particular incident, you had people, again, wanting to help voluntarily. That is the instinct of Americans, to help each other, unless the government prohibits it. In the second incident, where there was a tornado, you had people show up with food, and the government there, the local government, did the right thing. What they did was they used the fire department and the police to cordon off areas where there are down power lines, areas that would have been dangerous for people to come in contact with it. So they protected the people from the dangers that were there, but they didn't interfere with people helping their neighbor. And so what they did was they the people that were bringing in food, corporations, individuals, sending in food like these individuals in California. But in North Carolina, the local government, instead of sending them packing and instead of prohibiting them from helping other people, allowed them to go to churches, to church parking lots. And there they brought all the food and all the supplies in, put it there as a distribution center. And it was allowed to be given to the people as long as they didn't come in contact with the dangerous areas. That was what the government did. That's what the government should be used for. We used to have that kind of society in America. How did we get that kind of society? You know, as we look at what we have now, as we're losing our free speech, as they're threatening to ban our Second Amendment, as we have now lost our rights to due process, to search warrants, and all these other issues that have been gradually imposed upon us in the name of security after 9/11, we are essentially a nation that has amnesia. We don't remember why we had these things. Why did we have these protections, these prohibitions against government action? We don't remember. We don't know our history. We are a nation that is teetering on the brink of suicide, like a meth addict. We are just like an addict. We are just concerned with our latest hit. Give me something to make the pain go away. Give me something to distract me. I don't really want to know about why we had these important things. And before I get into the story of Thanksgiving and how that applies to the society, what we could learn about basic human rights like life, liberty, free speech, self-defense, other things like that, due process. Before I get into that, I just want to focus for a moment on the doublethink of the left when we talk about immigration. Now, we're told that we are a nation of immigrants, that all immigrants are good. No immigrants are bad. We have to pretend that there are no criminals in the invasion group that is coming in by the tens of thousands. And if that happens, it's going to turn into a much bigger wave after that. So we're supposed to believe that there is nothing that we have to be concerned about any of that. Not concerned about the size, not concerned about jobs, not concerned about welfare, the welfare state that we have in place. Now, none of that was in place, of course, when the pilgrims came to America. But the PC narrative is to focus on how horrible white people were to the Indians, the pilgrims. Here's an example of this. As the Democrats have now won this election, they're going to take over the House. Politico reporter Rachel Bade tweeted that there was going to be no Chick-fil-A ideological food when the House of Democrats serve a Thanksgiving-type meal for their first caucus meeting in the room where the majority typically meets. So to celebrate their thankfulness for winning their election, they're going to ban ideological food like Chick-fil-A. Why do they hate Chick-fil-A? They hate Chick-fil-A because the CEO declared his support for traditional marriage. Now, this is traditional marriage as defined by every society, every religion. Marriage between one man and one woman, but they hate that. They hate the fact that Chick-fil-A closes on Sundays because that smacks of Christianity. So that is labeled ideological food, and it's going to be banned by the House Democrats. As Chick-fil-A's former CEO, Kathy said, he said, "I think we're inviting God's judgment on our nation when we shake our fist at him and say, we know better than you what constitutes marriage." And quite frankly, it's not even that. It's our Supreme Court saying to the people and the voters of America, we know better than you what constitutes marriage. And we don't care what your laws say. We don't care what your constitution say. We don't care what your referenda say. We're going to tell you what marriage is. And we passively sit by and let them usurp this authority out of the Supreme Court. One person named Heather wondered if Thanksgiving-type food might be problematical because it normalizes the pilgrims' colonization and eventual genocide of Native Americans. And there is the doublethink, isn't it? Because we're supposed to believe that all immigrants are good. But what happened with those undocumented European immigrants that we call the pilgrims? Well, it seems like they overwhelmed the Indians who are already here. They eradicated their nation. They eradicated their culture, their way of life. There was an unknown plague. Let's call it Disease X. That's what CDC would call it, right? Some Disease X went through eradicating entire segments of the population. Did that happen before the undocumented immigrants from Europe arrived or not? We're not certain. But, you know, they came in peace. They came as refugees. And now we have people who are coming in peace as refugees and so forth. There is a double think that is going on here. Now, you're going to say there's double think on the right as well. The difference is that as these people came, as these pilgrims came to America, they had gone through real persecution. They were not coming here because they were going to get cushier jobs or they were going to get welfare support payments or they're going to live off of the civilization that was already in place. The people who are coming here now, this invasion is. They're waving flags of the countries that they say they're being run out of, that they're afraid to stay in. Now, that's not the case. I'm going to tell you in the next segment, I'm going to tell you the kinds of persecution these people are really facing. It's one of the reasons why we have a strong Bill of Rights. But the Bill of Rights is nothing but a piece of paper if it doesn't live in our hearts, if we don't understand why those prohibitions are there. So I want to talk about that. But it really is the double think of the left, isn't it? That we don't really, we look at the people who came here and we're told that the immigrants who come in, and of course they look at the Ellis Island experience. Of course, the Ellis Island experience, people coming here, they were coming here for the freedoms that had been established by the people who were being persecuted religiously in the places that they fled, particularly England. And the people who came here wanted to enjoy those freedoms. Yes, they wanted prosperity. But there was no welfare state on Ellis Island. And nobody got in unless they were screened for disease and for other things. When we come back, I'm going to tell you the story of Squanto. I'm going to tell you the story of the pilgrims. And then following that, we're going to tell you the story of World War I. We're going to replay what we said after the 100th anniversary of the armistice on the 11th day of the 11th month. On the 11th hour, and people were dying right up to the last second. Welcome back on this Wednesday before Thanksgiving. I want to talk about the only religion that it's not okay to be. I want to talk about the only people group that it's not okay to be. I want to talk about the only immigrants that it's not okay to be. And I'm talking about the white English Pilgrim Christians. All other immigrants are good, but they're bad because they supposedly destroyed the Indians. So we'll talk about the interaction between the Pilgrims and the Indians. But first, let's talk about why the Pilgrims came to America. There was a great deal of religious persecution in England. This is where we get our Bill of Rights, why we have the kinds of prohibitions against government actions that we do. People in England were arrested, imprisoned because of their religious beliefs. That's why in the First Amendment we have the free exercise of religion. No law will be made to abridge that or our free speech because they suffered severely under that kind of persecution. They've been denied due process. They had star chambers. You had Puritans, some of them, who stayed and they fought. And you had the Pilgrims who decided they would leave. They would migrate elsewhere. So they left to pursue God and to pursue happiness. What they found when they went to the Netherlands was they found a society that was very tolerant, very libertarian in its approach to freedom of religion. They were able to stay there, but they didn't like the society. They didn't feel comfortable there. Some of them felt that it was decadent, that it wasn't having the right kind of influence on their children. So they decided they would go to America, where they could start fresh, where they could have and build a society that reflected their values, their religion, their culture, and not be oppressed by others. So after they'd learned the value of religious freedom and tolerance, they made the journey. You know, it's interesting that the Puritans who decided to stay to purify that society, it would eventually culminate in the English Civil War within 30 years. As Cromwell defeated the monarchy that was intolerant of religious freedom, they had a brief period of religious tolerance. I think it was about 5 years that Cromwell was in charge there. But that ended when he died and they brought back the exiled monarch, and religious intolerance reigned again. And what happened was you had people like John Bunyan and William Penn who came under the threats of the British government. John Bunyan, who wrote Pilgrim's Progress while he was serving time 12 years in jail, simply because he was a preacher that was not part of the Church of England. William Penn, who was a Quaker, Quakers were prohibited as well because they were not the official state religion. They padlocked the door of their church, so they met on the steps. And then when they did that again, they arrested William Penn and the other leaders. They tried them. They clearly violated the law. But the jurors looked at that and they said, well, we don't like that law. And out of that experience, out of the ordeal of Edward Bushnell, the foreman of the jury and the co-foreman, they found William Penn innocent. Even though he had clearly violated the law, they refused to send him to jail because they disagreed with the law. The judge was furious. He imprisoned them, the foreman of the jury and the number two of the jury. They served quite a bit of time in jail before they were finally released, as a lawyer said, show us the law that they broke. There is no law prohibiting jurors from using their conscience to say we don't agree with that law. There is no law. So it firmly established habeas corpus. It firmly established the right of informed jurors to decide not only the facts of a case, but to set in judgment of the law. Very important principles that we have now lost. These are principles that have been stolen from us. We've been lied to about what these principles are. And so as these were, people were going through these ordeals, 40 to 50 years after the Pilgrims had already come to America, the Puritans went through this, we had more people come to America telling the tales of religious persecution and the arbitrary use of authority. That's why, folks, we have the Bill of Rights, due process, religious freedom, free speech, and so forth. And now we are throwing these things away. The Pilgrims, on the other hand, when they came here, they nearly starved to death because of their experiment in socialism. Even though they had learned religious tolerance in the Netherlands, they nearly starved with socialism. They were all going to have everything in common. Nobody worked. And so then after the governor broke it up and said, everybody's going to have their own plot of land. If you don't work, you don't eat. You can depend on the charity of other people, but you're not going to be able to eat out of the common area. They got through that first mistake of socialism because of God's providence. You know, we look at the Indian side of this. Yes, there was a period of time at the beginning when the Indians and the Pilgrims got along quite well. But prior to that, Squanto's tale was one of hardship and persecution as well as the Pilgrims. He had been captured by some English slave traders, taken back to Spain. A priest bought him, took him to England. He worked for a merchant, eventually wound up learning English, becoming a Christian, and accompanying him back to his homeland, where he was going to assist them with things. When he got there, he found that everyone in his area had died of plague. All of his family, all of his relatives, everyone in the cities, the villages that he knew were dead. He stayed in the area, and as the Pilgrims arrived, they were amazed to find an Indian who walked up to them speaking perfect English. And they said, as William Bradford said, he was a special instrument sent of God. They saw it as God's providence, just as the founders of this country saw their victory against the greatest empire the world knew at the time, the superpower, the lone superpower of the world. They saw that as God's provision. Now, the Pilgrims had tried to get to Virginia. They were pushed back several times to that particular area. They nearly lost their lives in the difficult crossing. Squanto, a slave, hardships, but then brought about with that as to becoming a Christian and being there to be the ambassador between these two different groups. And they lived together peacefully for a generation until the treaties were violated by some of the politicians. And that began the largest war, King Philip's War, the largest war that ever affected during the colonial period. It was a period that saw massive destruction there with the settlers. They eventually prevailed. But as the left looks at this, they say that this was a genocide. No, it wasn't a genocide. Let me tell you what was a genocide. A genocide was what we did to the Indians after the Civil War. The same people who said, same General Sherman, who said, I can't remember the guy's name right now, but he said, when I get through with the Shenandoah Valley, a crow won't be able to fly from one side to the other without taking his provisions. He's the same guy who said the only good Indian is a dead Indian. They pursued a policy of genocide against the Indians after the Civil War, the same army who had tried a policy of genocide throughout the South, burning down everything in sight. That's what Sherman did. And then they used the reservation system to destroy the nations, the tongues, the tribes, confining them, like we see with Agenda 21, taking their children away to boarding schools to eradicate any memory of their civilization and their culture. Is that what is happening to us today? We'll be right back.
Move me on to any black square. Use me any time you want. Just remember that the goal is for us all to capture all we want.
Liberty. It's your move. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
That's right, the chess game in the trenches of World War II. What were they trying to capture? Were they trying to capture liberty? No. No, they were not trying to fight for nationalism either. I'm going to tell you really what this is really about in this fight. What our nationalism is about versus the eternal wars of Europe as they're now building, they think, another European empire. And Macron envisions himself as the little emperor of the globalists. This guy has a Napoleon complex, if ever anybody had one. But he wants to be the Napoleon of the globalists. I want to play for you a recording I thought was absolutely fascinating. This is a recording. They didn't have audio capability at the time the war ended. And what they did was they created it using sound ranging. I have no idea what this, I've never heard of this before. It recorded the intensity of noise to photographic film. A seismograph for earthquakes is a good comparison, says the article that put this up. They have the visual record allowed the Imperial War Museum in the UK, the British Imperial War Museum, to turn the moment back into audio to give an impression of what the moment was like on the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month when the guns fell silent. I want you to hear this. Listen to the guns. Let's go ahead and play the audio clip. Go ahead. Hear how intense it is? Big guns. Big guns right up to the very last second. And you'll hear them fade down. And you'll hear some rifle shots. And then it starts to go silent. And now the birds start to sing. Didn't take long for the birds to start to sing. Isn't that amazing? As many people said, I didn't realize that it went right up to the last minute that they continued to fire. Why would they do that? When they know that the war is going to end at a set time, the 11th hour, the 11th day of the 11th month, that it's going to end, 1918, why would they fire and try to kill people on the other side up until the very last minute? Well, of course, once you let loose the dogs of war, it's not easy to rein them in, is it? Revenge, bloodlust, all of those forces that are unleashed by war, we should be very careful when we unleash war. And I think it's also interesting, you know, the British Imperial War Museum, I've visited that with my family, spent a great deal of time there. I went there with my wife. We went back with my sons. I spent a couple of days in that museum looking at the details. They had an amazing exhibit when I went with my sons of World War I and trench warfare. Horrific. Absolutely horrific. Conditions. The living conditions. If you didn't even die. Even if you didn't die. And it's kind of interesting that the British Imperial War Museum is in a former lunatic asylum. They called it the Criminal Lunatic Asylum. And now it is the Imperial War Museum. Hasn't changed much, has it? It was actually called the Bedlam Asylum. That's where we get the idea, the general idea of Bedlam being chaos, crazy. War is crazy. Absolutely is crazy. And it is criminally insane. Lunatic. And I wished that some of the leaders would have said that. Macron used it as an opportunity to advance his agenda. Most of the rest of the leaders used it as platitudes of remembrance for people who became cannon fodder in the chess moves of these powerful men. And yet it doesn't end, does it? That was the war to end all wars, except wars never end. Wars are continuing. We have been in a continual state of war since we bought into the idea of a permanent standing army after World War II. We have a Saudi-led attack on Yemen, on the port, escalating. Just 150 people killed in the last 24 hours. Yes, we've had tremendous, horrific tragedies in California in the fires. A lot of people are missing there. But this is a different thing. This is being done deliberately. And it is going on now. In just a 24-hour span, at least 150 people killed after weeks of deadly fighting. Tens of thousands of people have been killed in Yemen. Any reporting on that? No. You'll see it on some smaller sites like Anti-War. I might talk about it, but mainstream media is not interested in this at all. The Saudis reported briefly halting airstrikes against the port amid a visit by the British Foreign Minister, Jeremy Hunt. He urged the Saudis to stop bombing. But within hours, they'd started the strikes again. Not like the armistice that you heard there. At the end of World War II. And while all this is going on, and while you got Macron wagging his finger at President Trump about nationalism and so forth, being the cause of wars, and it isn't, it can be used to motivate people in a war for power, for empire. You can use a lot of different things to motivate people. There he is. That's the little emperor, the little Napoleon with the complex. Looking up to President Trump as President Trump is brushing his shoulder there. I got a little bit of lint here on your shoulder, Napoleon. Let me get that off there for you. But as he's doing this, and as the Europeans are talking about war, what are they doing right now? Talking about how horrible it was and the sacrifice and so forth. The European governments and the European Union are publicly wringing their hands about human tragedy, reports Middle East Eye, and the need for life-saving assistance in Yemen, not just in Europe. The 100th anniversary. Yet, while the Saudi-led coalition has bombed the region's poorest country over the past 3 years, the European Union and European countries approved the sale of more than $86.7 billion, billion with a B, in arms to Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates. So they say, this is just horrible. We've got to do something. We need to have a humanitarian plan. We've got to help these poor Yemenis. And yet they make $87 billion in profits arming the Saudis. And that is 55 times more money than the EU and the European countries have donated to the Yemen humanitarian response plan. They don't really care about that. They don't care about the lives of people. They don't care about the lives of these Yemenis. They don't care about the lives of their own soldiers. And they don't care about the principles that these soldiers thought they were fighting for either. The principles, just like the lives of the soldiers, are expendable in these manufactured wars for empire. Meanwhile, independent researchers estimate that more than 56,000 Yemenis have been killed, with the UN warning a clear and present danger of an imminent famine engulfing 14 million Yemenis, or half the population. Why? Because they're about to take over. This is the port that they bombed in the last 24 hours, killing 150 people. That's the last port of entry for food coming into Yemen. They say only Germany and Norway have suspended their sales. And they did it, why? Because of the murder of Khashoggi. So they said, until you explain the murder of Khashoggi, we're not going to sell you any more weapons. Nevertheless, that didn't stop the UK, France, and Spain. Not even Khashoggi's murder. You know, one murder is a tragedy, especially when it's recorded on an iPhone or an Apple Watch. But the death of 56,000, just a statistic, right? And it's going to be business as usual. Ben Donaldson in the UK said the UK and many of its EU allies insist there is no military solution to the conflict, yet they themselves are supplying the weapons that they are fueling and prolonging the hostility. There has just been one UN Security Council resolution in 3 years of conflict, which is very surprising, given its severity compared to other conflicts. And the UK is taking sides in the conflict, which flies against its position of penholder and its responsibility. See, things haven't really changed, have they? Even though the EU and the UN say they're all about peace. Are they really?
I'm ready for it.
I want to talk a little bit about the little Napoleon and the forces that I think are driving us to something that may be far worse than what they just remembered 100 years ago. Before I do, real quickly, I want to tell you about some of the sales that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. We have 67% off in a blowout special of Silver Bullet. That's our colloidal silver. Very effective. I always keep that around whenever I travel, especially, but whenever I start to feel sick, always take some colloidal silver, and usually that heads that off. Colloidal silver and vitamin C, that's my regimen. I start to feel bad, start to feel like I'm coming down with something. I take those two, and most of the time it works. Silver Bullet, 67% off. That's our colloidal silver. 57% off of Super Male Vitality. Both of those, free shipping. As a matter of fact, free shipping store-wide right now. Also, 50% off Brain Force Plus, my favorite supplement that we have here. I call it Brain Focus because it really does focus my mind, helps me to recall. Survival Shield X3, Nascent Iodine, that is also 50% off. And again, free shipping because it is free shipping store-wide. Two more specials I'll tell you about. One particular to our audience here. We have an exclusive for our listeners. You can save $10 on the new InfoWars Hexagon Polo. Just use the code REALNEWS at checkout, and you can save $10 on that new golf shirt with the InfoWars Hexagon logo. And finally, we have Alexa Pure Pro, the large gravity feed water filter from Alexa Pure, $127. That's almost half off of its typical $250 price. They save $123 on that right now. Folks, you should always, always be proactive in filtering your water. You never know what is in it. It gets out organic bacteria, things like that, but also chemical spills that might find their way into your water, even if you're on well water. Especially if you're on well water, you're likely to get glyphosate or maybe have a leaking tank somewhere from some dry cleaner or some filling station or something. You might have an underground storage container that leaks into the aquifer. You're not safe if you're on city water either. They deliberately put things like fluoride in it. We've talked about that many times, but look at what happened at Flint, Michigan, and they don't tell you until you notice the symptoms in your children. So be proactive. Make sure you always have clean drinking water for yourself, for your family. Right now, you can save $123 off of the Alexa Pure Pro Gravity Feed water filter. That means you don't need to have electric power. It's great for emergencies as well. All of those specials and free shipping store-wide at InfoWarsStore.com. Okay, I kind of find it interesting that over the weekend, as they had this memorial 100 years after the armistice of World War I, Emmanuel Macron used this for his pet project of attacking the forces that are pulling this consolidation, this little empire that he hopes he's going to be in charge of. Of course, he has been competing with Angela Merkel. She is now on the ropes politically because people are fed up with the people replacement program that's going on there in Germany. They see what is happening there. He's got a little bit more time because he's newer, but people are starting to get pretty tired of Macron as well. But he still sees himself as the leader of a European empire. About 5 days before this ceremony, he was out there touting the European Union army, and I didn't talk about it at the time. I'll talk about it a little bit here. Folks, that is really the issue. What he is out there talking about creating, a standing European army, that is the reason for World War I. You know, we've got something that is much more dangerous that is coming up right now. We're coming up to a cycle in human history, a generational turning point. And again, you should read the book Fourth Turning if you haven't. Strauss and Howe went back 500 years in American and English British history to see this recurring cycle about every 80 years having a major restructuring of society. Frequently, these restructurings are accompanied by wars. Things like the Revolutionary War, the Civil War, World War II. Those were all fourth turnings. Now, as we talk about resurging old demons, that's what I see coming. I see history being recycled because I see history as cyclical. And again, they make a very good case for that in that book, The Fourth Turning. But the interesting thing about World War I is that it happened outside of that cyclical turning. It was just a domino cascade of errors and egos of these leaders. And at first, everybody was saying, well, you know, the problem is the royalty that got us into this. And so even during the war, you had the czars executed. You had the Russian Revolution because they blamed the war on royalty and the egos, you know, the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand and so forth, and the Austro-Hungarian Empire, all these different structures that were there. They blamed the current political structure for the war. And they thought it would be all better if they had democracies, but that didn't really work out either. The problem is, in my opinion, standing armies. And that was the opinion of the founding fathers of this country as well. And when you have these standing armies, when you have these politicians who have an empire mindset like Macron, who are trying to accrue and concentrate power to themselves, those are the elements that create things like World War I. And so even though it wasn't a major turning point, a restructuring of society, it still happened because you had this standing army, which is like a standing powder keg, and all they needed was a spark to set it off. And you had a typical bunch of blunders. It was the type of thing that the founders had always looked at Europe as having, these constant eternal European wars, not a remaking of society. Because, you know, people look at that and they say, that was a just war. That was a justifiable war, whatever. They look at the Revolutionary War, the Civil War. They look at the World War II and they say, yeah, that was a time when we were really fighting for something. World War I, they weren't fighting for anything, as a matter of fact. So they talk about it as a never again moment. It reawoke a lot of the understanding of Americans of what the founding fathers were about. Why we did not want to have a standing army. Why we did not want to make foreign alliances, especially with the Europeans and so forth. And yet I think we misunderstood them. It wasn't never again. It was really never end, because that's really what their wars are about. We had Macron lecturing us. Of course, you've heard the quote many times by now. Patriotism is the exact opposite of nationalism, he said. Nationalism is a betrayal of patriotism, you stupid English types. Yeah, well, not at all. Not at all. I'll tell you what patriotism is. Patriotism was summed up by Smedley Butler. He said, talking about true patriotism, he said, we fight to protect our homes and our Constitution. So we fight to defend our lives, to defend our lives. Not in foreign wars of empire, not for regime change in the Middle East. We fight to defend our homes. He said, everything else is a racket. It is organized crime. And he was exactly right. And when we fight to defend our Constitution, we are fighting to defend our values. That is what nationalism is about. Patriotism is about fighting to defend your homeland. Nationalism is about fighting to defend your political system and the values embodied in that political and legal system, in our Constitution. And if we had stuck to those values, we would have never been drawn into World War I. Macron then went on to say, he said, in saying that our interests are first, whatever happens to others, you erase the most precious thing a nation can have, that which makes it live, that which causes it to be great, and that which is most important is its moral values. Well, of course. And quite frankly, however, Macron is embracing the same type of realpolitik that Henry Kissinger embraced and made popular, along with that phrase, realpolitik. What that means is the politics of pragmatism. We do whatever is in our interest. And as Henry Kissinger famously said, he said, we don't have any permanent allies. We have permanent interests. And they have no morals and no principles whatsoever. Henry Kissinger, who has said that soldiers are nothing but animals to be slaughtered. Paraphrase what he had to say. But we have seen what he believes and what he did. Let's contrast that a little bit to the founding fathers. James Madison, we've said this many times, a standing military force with an overgrown executive will not long be safe companions to liberty. The means of defense against foreign danger have always been the instruments of tyranny at home. Among the Romans, it was a standing maxim to excite a war whenever a revolt was apprehended. That is what we're coming up to. We will have war excited. There may be an accompanied economic cause. There is certainly a cultural clash that is building, as I said before the election, regardless of who wins or loses or how they stuff the ballots. You're going to have more and more unrest. And they know that. And they're going to use a war. They're going to start a war to try to control us. More on that when we come back. Stay with us. I'll be back.
Free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Maybe Emmanuel Macron should read the writing of our former president, James Madison, the father of the Bill of Rights. He said, throughout Europe, the armies kept under the pretext of defending have enslaved the people. And quite frankly, that is the true purpose of Macron's EU army. He's not going to be putting that up there to protect them from foreign invasions. He's inviting the foreign invaders, the fifth columns, coming into the country. He's opened up the borders. He's part of the globalist open border cartel. He is not going to defend the people. He's going to use the army to attack the people who object to that. Object to having their homes destroyed. See, patriotism, as I said, Smedley Butler said, it's about defending your home. That's one of the only reasons to fight. Defend your home, defend the Constitution. Patriotism is defending your home. Nationalism is defending your legal system, your Constitution, your way of life, your culture. And those are things worth fighting for. The European army will be used to suppress the culture, the legal system, and it'll be used to destroy the homeland of the European people. Madison also said, of all the enemies to public liberty, war is perhaps the most to be dreaded because it comprises and develops the germ of every other enemy to liberty. War is the parent of armies, and from these proceed debts and taxes. Armies and debts and taxes are the known instruments for bringing the many under the domination of the few. So let's talk about this. You know, it was just last week, as Emmanuel Macron was talking about his new idea for a European army, which is not a new idea. It was talked about and being put in place as they were talking about Brexit. But of course, at that time, it was anybody who talked about a European Union army was denounced as a conspiracy theorist. And then immediately after Brexit, they said, oh yeah, we do have a European army plan. And every year they've been getting more and more adamant about it. But as I was talking last week about the Pentagon and how we have this standing army, and remember, James Madison said that armies, debts, and taxes are the known instruments for bringing the many under the domination of the few. The Pentagon cannot account for $21 trillion. $21 trillion. And as I was gone last week, I saw articles talking about how, well, we got to raise the debt ceiling again. We got to raise it up to $22 trillion. And since I just covered the fact that the Pentagon has lost $21 trillion. Now, when I say lost, that means that some of this has been done covertly. We're not allowed to know because we're just the poor schmucks that work and pay the taxes for this and have the debt put onto our children and our grandchildren. No, we're not allowed to know some of this stuff. A lot of it is corruption. A lot of it is stolen. It's just gone missing. We don't know where it went in the pockets of corrupt officials in this country and elsewhere. Nevertheless, $21 trillion is the amount of money that is equivalent to the cumulative debt. And that means that that's all of the shortcomings that we've had on an annual basis, the deficit, the annual deficit, the difference between the taxes that we bring in and what we spend. You take that annual deficit from the time of the founding fathers until today, and it is equal to the amount that the Pentagon has lost, $21 trillion. Isn't that interesting? Maybe we should have the Pentagon be responsible for paying off the debt. But yeah, it is a way to control us, isn't it? It is a way to dominate us through debt, through war, through standing armies. And now the European Union is going to get their own as well. Aren't they lucky? We'll be right back. Stay with us.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, The David Knight Show.
Welcome back on this November 13th, 2018. Again, 2 days ago was the 100th anniversary of the armistice, the end of World War I. Would have been interesting to hear one of the leaders, just one, quote Benjamin Franklin, and just stand up. This is what I would have done. I would have stood up and said, Benjamin Franklin said there never was a good war or a bad peace. End of story. Enough said. That says it all, doesn't it? Never was a good war. And boy, I tell you, World War I was not a good war. And you heard, as I played in the last hour, amazingly, even though they had already arranged to end the war at a specific hour, the 11th hour, the 11th day of the 11th month, they fired the guns, the cannons, right up to that last minute, trying to kill each other. It's amazing. It's amazing. As I was talking about the deficit and James Madison saying, the way that you dominate and destroy a population and their freedom is with a standing army, with debt, and with taxes. Those all seem to go together, don't they? And as Thomas Jefferson said, never was so much false arithmetic employed on any subject as that which has been employed to persuade nations that it is in their interest to go to war. Well, we've got a lot of false arithmetic as part of the national debt. And there's a lot of interest that is accumulating on that. As I mentioned, they're about to raise the debt ceiling to $22 trillion. It's now $21 trillion, which is, coincidentally, the amount of money that the Pentagon can't account for. Not the amount of money that they spent that they'll tell us about, but the money amount of money that they won't or can't tell us about, or the amount of money that was stolen or lost or spent in secret. They won't tell us about that. $21 trillion, equivalent to all of the annual deficits going back to the beginning of the American Republic. $21 trillion. That's our debt. Now, what is the interest on that? Is it our interest to go to war? No, but it is going to be our interest for the debt. Interest costs on the federal debt of $263 billion accounted for 6.6% of all government spending and 1.4% of gross domestic product. Well below the averages of the last 50 years, they say. However, the Congressional Budget Office estimates that interest spending will rise to $915 billion by 2028. Or 13% of all outlays, and 3.1% of gross domestic product. It'll spend more on interest than it spends on Medicaid by 2020. More in 2023 than it spends on national defense. More in 2025 than it spends on all non-defense discretionary programs combined. So just remember that when we come up and Trump and Pelosi extend the debt ceiling yet again. When we look at what is going on with this and what the founders said, going back to the Constitution, they saw military affairs as self-defense, You know, when we have all this talk from Macron about, patriotism, nationalism, those are horrible. We want globalism. Well, self-defense, defending your home, defending your political system, your culture, country, those are justifiable. But it's not about aggression. It's not about power projection. That is what the American government has been about since the end of World War II. And that is what Macron wants to make the European government about, power projection. Not only did he say we're going to have a European army, but he had his finance minister, the French finance minister, double down on it and say, yeah, we've got to have an empire. Now, when you start talking about an empire and you start talking about a standing army, those are the forces that create wars. Now, it's absolutely amazing to me that nobody called him on that. It wasn't nationalism. It was empires and standing wars. Yeah, the founders were totally against aggression. They were against power projection. They would have rejected this whole idea of nation building in other places. No, they said, we don't go abroad seeking monsters to destroy. Remember that? George Washington, in his farewell address, I'll just tell you again, you know this, you've heard this before, but we forget it because we get caught up in these political parties, in these politicians at the front of these political parties. George Washington, it is our true policy to steer clear of permanent alliances with any portion of the foreign world. Get out of NATO. That's what President Trump campaigned on. We don't need that foreign alliance. Macron and Germany can't bother to pay 2% of their budget into NATO. And yet they say that they've got to have it for their defense. And now they say, well, we're going to do it ourselves. Well, good luck with that. Good luck with that. Let's see how that works out. You have drowned yourself in socialist welfare to the extent that you don't have any money left over for a warfare state. Anyway, he went on to say, George Washington, as avenues to foreign influence in innumerable ways, such attachments, such as permanent alliances, such as NATO, are particularly alarming to the truly enlightened and independent patriot. And he said this, which we could understand as being the folly of globalism. There can be no greater error than to expect or calculate upon real favors from nation to nation. In other words, let's forget about the fact that they've got our back. Let's forget about the fact that we're going to have this thing called free trade. Let's understand that we're coming at this working in our interest. That is Trump's policy, and they call it a trade war. Now, we've had a trade war for decades against us. And when we come back and say, well, we're not getting any favors from Mexico. We're not getting any favors from China. As a matter of fact, they're eviscerating our industry, the same as if they had bombed it. They just tear down the buildings in a slow motion process so we don't notice. And they say, oh, well, you're doing a trade war. No, that's the globalism. Globalism is telling us we've got to have these multinational, multilateral agencies, and then we'll get favors from them. They will protect us. They will be in our interest. No, George Washington said, there's no greater folly than to expect that you're going to get favors from other nations like that. You look after yourself. And again, John Quincy Adams, the U.S. does not go abroad in search of monsters to destroy. She is a well-wisher to the freedom and independence of all. She is a champion and vindicator of her own. And this is how we lost it here. You know, it was a lie from Woodrow Wilson that sold this war, this World War I, an absolutely reprehensible lie. He wound up jailing a filmmaker. The guy went to jail. His name was Goldstein. He did a movie called The Spirit of 76. Woodrow Wilson wanted to get involved in World War I. He had just campaigned and won on the slogan, he kept us out of war. And just like the liars at the European Union, who were saying, we don't have any plans for a European army. Woodrow Wilson was saying, I don't have any plans to send an army to Europe. And he was lying. He was lying. And innocently, this filmmaker who had worked on Birth of a Nation and had done amazing jobs with set pieces showing historical figures. I mean, they looked like the photographs that had been taken, and like moving photographs of Abraham Lincoln, of Robert E. Lee, and so forth. Well, he decided that he would do a film, another turning point, right? The Revolutionary War. And so he produced the film. Unfortunately for him, Woodrow Wilson had other plans because he didn't like the American public seeing the British as our enemy because he wanted to get us entangled in a foreign war. And so when the film premiered, they censored it in Chicago. And then he waited a while, and then he put it in L.A., uncensored again. At that point, they arrested him. They sentenced him to 10 years, Woodrow Wilson did. They sentenced him in violation of the Espionage Act. They gave him a massive fine. He was eventually had his sentence commuted a couple of years after World War I ended by Woodrow Wilson. He left the country to try to resume his career in Europe. He disappeared in 1935. Ironically, he was presumed killed in a Nazi concentration camp. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Ceremony on Sunday. Well, I don't have to guess because I know what he said 4 years ago on the anniversary. He visited Flanders Field, the cemetery in Belgium, a site of massive carnage and slaughter. For what reason? I mean, nobody can still come up with a reason that anybody was fighting. It's just because the other people were fighting them. As I said before, it was a massive domino cascade of egos and errors that got these people into it. And once they got started, they couldn't stop, just like you heard that recording. They fired up until the last second of the 11th hour, the 11th day of the 11th month. And then all of a sudden, the guns stopped. I mean, it was a full-on artillery barrage that you could hear going on. And all of a sudden, it just stops. You hear birds singing. That insanity. Insane the way that it began. Insane the way that it ended. What reason? We don't know. And yet Barack Obama gave us a reason. 4 years ago, he goes to Flanders Field in Belgium. He said, the soldiers who manned the trenches were united by something larger, a willingness to fight and die for the freedom that we enjoy as their heirs. They weren't fighting for freedom. They were fighting for their lives. They got stuck there by Woodrow Wilson. They're trying to get out alive. It's people like this, people like Barack Obama, trying to give meaning to this tragedy that just fills more cemeteries. Let's understand the futility of war, and no war better illustrates the futility of war than World War I. Let's not lose this opportunity. As they point out, you know, Woodrow Wilson, I said it in the last segment, he campaigned in 1916. His campaign slogan was, he kept us out of war. And then as soon as he got in, he got them into war. He's going to make the world safe for democracy. What does that mean? Not about liberty, right? Not about liberty, because it doesn't really work out too well for your liberty. And as I pointed out, Robert Goldstein, the filmmaker who did Spirit of 1776, you can't find that anywhere. They destroyed all the copies of it. They sent him to jail under the Espionage Act. Does this sound familiar? You know, the first casualty of war is the truth, isn't it? And how do they kill truth? They kill it with censorship. And they eventually killed Robert Goldstein, sent him to prison. It was just as the U.S. was getting into the war. He was sentenced to 10 years. He was sentenced to a fortune in that time, about $10,000. That was a lot of money back then. That was before the Federal Reserve came into power and devaluated our currency by 99.9% purchasing power. So, you know, $10,000 was a lot of money. But he was sentenced to jail for 10 years. Woodrow Wilson let him out a year or two after the war ended. They had accused him of being a German spy. And, of course, the British wouldn't let him into their country. He wanted to go to Europe and restart his film career because he didn't want to try to make any more films in America. The Supreme Court had ruled in 1915 that films didn't have First Amendment protection. Oh, but that's right. Supreme Court can never be wrong, right? They make a ruling about when life begins or whatever. You know, they can never be overturned. Well, they were. In 1952, they reversed themselves and said, no, you do have First Amendment protection for films. But they didn't have it then. So they accused him of being a German agent. They put him in prison. He gets out of prison. He goes to Europe to try to restart his film career. The last anybody heard from him was 1935. And ironically, this guy who was accused of being a German spy in America shut down and jailed under the Espionage Act for exercising First Amendment rights. And quite frankly, folks, that, you know, that was entertainment, but it was political because it was about the founding of this country. And he was put in jail for political reasons. He winds up, this guy falsely accused of being a German spy, because, of course, we were at war with the Germans. That's why they accused him of being a German spy instead of a Russian spy. Today, he would be accused of being a Russian collaborator. Did you send any letters to somebody in Russia? He eventually, last anybody heard from him was 1935. They believe he was executed in a Nazi camp for being Jewish. So as we look at this, and as Macron attacks American nationalism, let's understand what our American nationalism means. If America embraced the nationalist principles of our founders, what this nation is really about, we wouldn't have the kind of wars that we do everywhere else. If we and other nations embrace this, if they embrace these same principles, then they wouldn't be aggressing on us either. Everybody would just be there to defend themselves. They wouldn't have standing armies. They wouldn't be involved in regime change. And on and on. They wouldn't be creating empires for power as the French want to do here. The founders called war. They called it by what it was, war. They didn't have any pretense. They didn't use any euphemisms like a police action or a stability operation or a counterinsurgency or a humanitarian intervention. They understood there's war and there's peace. All the rest of this is nothing but a bunch of lies and prevarications to get what you want. A war under the Constitution would have a beginning. You would have a declaration in the houses of Congress, the people's representatives. They would make a formal declaration. That is the beginning. The middle, it would be run by the executive, and it would be paid for with funds appropriated by the Congress, paid for by the people. And it would have an ending, a purpose that was declared from the beginning. See, when we had our country defined by the principles of the founding fathers and Christianity, we had a beginning, a middle, and an end to war. And we had a justification for war. You didn't go to war unless somebody aggressed on your territory. And other than that, you stayed out of it. We didn't go abroad seeking monsters to destroy, because what happens is you become a monster yourself, as we have now learned. So they want to talk about these ancient demons. Yeah, it's really the standing armies that we're looking at. And so, of course, you had Macron, before this weekend, was already floating his idea of a European standing army. But, of course, it goes back beyond that. But it was escalated prior to President Trump tweeting out. First Macron puts out that he wants to have a European standing army. Then his finance minister says that they need an empire to compete with China and the U.S. and Russia. That's the French finance minister, after the declaration from Macron that they want to have a real European army. So he goes on to say, do not get me wrong. I am talking about a peaceful empire. Show me one. You ever had a peaceful empire in history? No, you haven't. You've had nations that mind their business. You've had nations like Switzerland is the prime example in our lifetime of somebody that values, that looks at themselves as a closed community. They're going to circle the wagons. They're going to protect that community. They stayed neutral even during World War II. But empires, no. You don't have such a thing as a peaceful empire. And Macron says, I want to raise awareness of the world of tomorrow will be about power. Power will make a difference. Technological power, economic, financial, monetary, cultural power will be crucial. And it will lead to war. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Liberty. It's your move. And now, The David Knight Show.
Welcome back. I want to say just one more thing about this weekend, about World War I, about the European army, the new empire that is the vision of Macron as he wishes to be the little figurehead for the globalists. This is something that goes back, of course, to Bilderberg, holding their first meeting 10 years after the last victory of the Nazis, at the site of the last victory of the Nazis, a vision for taking over Europe and unifying it, which the Nazis were not able to accomplish. They also came up with that. Of course, there had been much talk about a unified trade zone, but they came up with the idea at Bilderberg first of having a European currency, the euro. And that was either the first or the second, I can't remember, meeting that they had at Bilderberg. But now the torch has been passed from the Germans to the French, thanks Macron, because of the problems of Angela Merkel. Is globalization going to bring peace? You know, there's an op-ed piece on Bloomberg by Hal Brands. And he said they thought that it would in 1914. He said the British author Norman Angell would immortalize himself by suggesting just a few years before World War I that what we would now call globalization had rendered conflict between great powers obsolete. War, he argued, had become futile because peace and the growing economic and financial linkages between the major European states were producing so much prosperity. That's what we're always told, isn't it? We have to have the quote-unquote free trade, which is not free trade. It's not free trade if you've got thousands of pages saying these people are going to charge 10 times the import duty that you will charge on their goods coming into your country. That's not free trade. That's managed trade. Trade managed by a globalist organization, by a multinational, multilateral agreement. That's not free trade. That's managed trade, not managed to our benefit, managed to the benefit of China and other nations. But of course, we're told by the doctrinaire libertarians and the Wall Street Republicans that free trade is in our interest in spite of what we have seen over the last 25 years. They're still telling us that lie. And they were told that if we have financial linkage, if we have economic ties, you know, we own these factories over there and they own factories over here and so forth, we're not going to have war. That's what they were telling everybody in 1914 before this broke out. Engel had a lot of company. That was actually the common knowledge of the time, what the intellectuals all thought. They all thought that at the time. They believed that improved communications were knitting humanity together like they never had before. And of course, now we have the internet, we have social media, and they are going to use that, they think, as a tool of population control. And they're very upset that the truth has got out. And so, of course, the truth has to be shut down. That's why we have the censorship. Truth, free speech, always the first casualty of war, the globalists. And it was about a year ago that we had a former NATO guy, former FBI guy, testifying on Congress. Didn't get much attention. I've talked about it several times. Talking in Congress and saying, we've got an information war going on right now. We've got to silence the cannons of nationalism. And we're going to do it by silencing them on social media, by censorship on social media. You have to understand, the censorship is the penultimate cause are these people in Silicon Valley that are using their political causes right now. But it's going to come around to them as well eventually, perhaps. But certainly the street who is out there cheering on all the censorship of anybody that says anything that is politically incorrect, eventually it's going to come around to them if they get in the way of the military establishment, of the neocons, of their permanent war. Because this is coming from NATO and the military establishment. DARPA and others, the Atlantic Council, funding, helping to build Facebook and these other structures that are now being used to control us. And now they're paying dividends, contributing back to the Atlantic Council and doing exactly what they want. And so at the time of World War I, we had Germany trying to get what? Power. Power, like Macron is saying. Actually, I don't think Macron is that much of a threat. I think China is. China will start wars. China does want power. They may need to build a military to defend themselves against China. They don't need to build a military to defend themselves against the United States, which is basically what Macron was saying. He said, we have to protect ourselves with respect to China, Russia, even the United States of America. He thinks we are a threat to them. We're a threat to them only to the extent that people understand that they need to put their homes and their families and their communities before some globalist, nebulous idea that beats the wars of drums, beats the drums of war to send them off to their death. That's what the Swiss did. They don't want that kind of neutrality, nationalist neutrality, patriotic neutrality. They don't want that. That's what President Trump campaigned on. That type of neutrality that we saw with the founding fathers and others. And so as he was talking about all this, President Trump trolled him a couple of days before the ceremony on Sunday, said perhaps Europe should pay its fair share of NATO, which the U.S. subsidizes greatly. No, they're not going to defend themselves, I don't think. But when we go back and we look at this European army, I just want to say one more thing about this. And that was the fact that it was a conspiracy theory. Remember when it was a conspiracy theory a couple of years ago, 2.5 years ago? Had all these conspiracy theories and fake news, we were told at the time. And we had this report at InfoWars, June 23rd, 2016. Proposed EU army hidden from British voters until after Brexit, we said. And we were denounced as conspiracy theorists. So were the British politicians who were talking about it. And they knew. And they were still saying, it's a conspiracy theory. You had former Deputy Prime Minister Nick Clegg, a Liberal Democrat. He said, this is a dangerous fantasy, this idea that we're going to have a European Union army. This is just something that is being used to drum up support for Brexit at the time. However, we said at InfoWars, I'm reading from the article June 23rd, 2016, as citizens of the UK prepare to cast their votes in a nationwide referendum to decide whether or not to leave the European Union, a plan detailing the initial framework for the creation of a European Union army is being kept hidden from the public until the day after the vote. The global strategy on foreign and security policy, which envisions the formation of a new European military and operational structures, was drafted by Federica Mogherini, the High Representative for the European Union for Foreign Affairs and Security Policy. While the plan clearly lays the framework of European Union army, details will not be released publicly until the day after the Brexit vote so as not to inflame public opinion in the UK. Only a small group of EU political and security committee ambassadors who are required to leave their electronic devices outside a sealed room can read the proposal. They are, however, allowed to take and remove handwritten notes. And then you have Jean-Claude Juncker raising the specter of Russia. He said, you would not create a European army to use it immediately, but a common army among the Europeans would convey to Russia that we're serious about defending the values of the European Union. And Nigel Farage said at the time, he said, we ourselves in the European Union provoked the conflict through our territorial expansion in the Ukraine. We poked the Russian bear with a stick, and unsurprisingly, Putin reacted. But now this is being used as an opportunity to build a European army. And Mr. Juncker said, we must convey to Russia that we are serious. Who do you think you are kidding, Mr. Juncker? And so then, sure enough, that was the 23rd, the 29th, just days after Brexit, EU releases plan for further expansion and an EU army. And a strong hint that it plans to create a shared army that can operate alongside, but also separately from NATO. It says that the Europeans must be better equipped, as well as be able to act autonomously as necessary. Now, it was a conspiracy theory, right? No, it was a conspiracy. It was a conspiracy fact. And we told you about that. We told you so. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Chuck Schumer saying he is willing to shut down the government in order to protect the Mueller investigation. And it's not just the government that they're willing to shut down. They're willing to shut down the economy. They're wanting to shut down the economy. And they have the power now, presumably, to do it. Because, as I said at the top of the program, the Democrat motto is now not just vote early, vote often, but it's also vote after and vote until you win. And we've just seen this now in Arizona. We're going to see what happens in Georgia and Florida. Absolutely amazing and disgusting how this election has been sold. Tell me that it takes weeks to count your votes. Absentee ballots, those are cast before the election, and you can't figure out where that is. And as always, isn't it interesting, it's always the Democrat strongholds where they can't count the votes. I said this before the election. Remember, I said, I don't ever vote until election day. Because I've seen this happen so many times. It's like a game of poker. The Democrats always, on election night, you'll see that the Republican candidate is typically winning. People out in the rural and suburban areas, they're voting, they're turning in their votes, and so then the Democrats in these corrupt urban areas just sit there and watch the returns. Let's say, what are they holding? How many votes have they got in their hand? All right, got some more votes up your sleeve? How about in the trunk of the car? Can you pull in a couple of ballot boxes and so forth? Maybe we can just stick some in the closet of a school and let somebody discover them, you know, fill them with all that kind of stuff. But I don't know how it got there. I don't know. And I've seen this happen so many times. You sit there election night, you watch this, and everybody else in the states, you know, the areas that are Republican controlled, they all turn in their votes. They know how to count, evidently, and the Democrats don't know how to count. Oh, no, they know how to count. They're counting on you telling them how many votes you got first. I think for once, They ought to stop all these things and let everybody turn in all of their counts at the same time. How about that? And then maybe they ought to do some exit polling, especially in areas like Palm Beach. As I've said before, there have been election after election where you've seen electronic voting used to rig elections. Even the fact that the votes are totaled up on boards of elections, websites, and we had a hacking contest just this last summer back in, what was it, July, August? I think it was August. Hacking contest and DEF CON and so forth, Black Hat Conference and DEF CON in Las Vegas, two conferences 1 week apart. One of them is kind of an establishment hacking fest. That's where the NSA and DARPA go to find some of their new recruits and so forth. The other one is really kind of an honest grassroots thing. And at that honest grassroots thing, that's DEF CON. DEF CON, I think, is maybe the establishment. Anyway, whichever one is the second one is more of a grassroots thing. They set up 30-some-odd kids from about 5 to 16 years old, gave them a fixed amount of time to break into replicas of the state boards of elections websites and change the votes. And virtually all of the children were able to do it. I think it was a 15-year-old girl who did it the quickest. All but about three or four were able to do it in the allotted amount of time. It is child's play, literally child's play. And that was the point they were trying to make at the hacking conference. That we're fools to let these Republicans and Democrats put all this stuff on computers. It needs to be done with paper ballots. But, of course, they also try to hide the paper ballots from your view. Oh, can't look at this. No. As we saw yesterday, right, from Gateway Pundit. They had that on InfoWars yesterday, showing the people screening it. Oh, no, you can't look at this. Don't look at this. Everything the government does is hidden from you. Why is that? Doesn't that raise some suspicion of the government? I mean, you know, whenever you criticize the government, whenever you say, that looks suspicious, that doesn't make any sense what they're telling me. You question what they have to say. You say that what they're doing looks suspicious because they're over there trying to hide everything. You're denounced as a conspiracy theorist. And that's it. That's all they need to say. And then we're done, right? Oh, don't have to talk about that. They're just conspiracy theorists. No, we're saying that there is a conspiracy here. There is criminal collusion to rig this election. And it's not a theory. It's a fact. Like I said, that's why I always wait until election day, because I'm not going to let them have any advance notice of how I voted so they can stuff the ballots. But I think we need to hold back all the ballots in the suburban and rural areas until the big city corrupt Democrats have their votes counted, however long it takes them. Takes them a week, takes them a month. That's right. You say, all right, we'll put our cards down on the table at the same time. What are you holding? And just see how they stuff the ballot then. Because that's what they're doing. They're waiting until after the election. How many more do we need? And then they've been voting and voting and voting and voting and voting. And now in Arizona, they've now flipped it. And so you got Chuck Schumer willing to shut down the government to protect the Mueller investigation. You got Nancy Pelosi in a Friday interview that aired on Face the Nation, CBS on Sunday, said Whitaker's appointment does violence to the Constitution and our vision of our founders. What's that? Can Nancy Pelosi quote one thing the founder said? One thing the founder said that she agrees with? She doesn't care about this country whatsoever. I mean, Nancy Pelosi is the one who wants to create a North American union. You know, that border, it's just, we got one community. It just happens to have this border, which doesn't mean anything, running through it. Which is exactly what this NGO, this non-governmental organization, funded by globalists, by Soros and others, this Pueblo Sin Fronteras or whatever the Spanish is, what it means is a village without borders. She doesn't want America. She doesn't want the vision of the founders. That is not a vision. Our vision of government is not shared by Central and South American countries. They don't share that vision. They'd be better off if they adopted it. But they don't want liberty. They don't want freedom. They want free stuff. That's why they're coming here. But she says that his appointment does violence to the Constitution. Exactly how? How? And to put such a person in such a manner to be chief legal officer in our country, that that's bipartisan, she said, that everybody hates that. Schumer said on State of the Union Some senators who may or may not have standing to bring a suit are pursuing legal action challenging Whitaker's appointment. They're going to shut down the government. And then they're going to try to raise our taxes. They're going to fight us for all those crumbs on your kitchen table. You know, they said, oh, those are crumbs. Well, we've seen lower unemployment. We've seen, certainly there's room for improvement. We look at real income. That needs to be improved. And it needs to have some more time for the tax cuts and the regulation cuts that President Trump did to fully percolate throughout the system. But there's already been a lot of very positive results of this. They want to take those away. They fought that from day one. Fought it from day one. And they're going to continue to fight it. President Trump said yesterday the stock market is rattled by the prospect of Democratic harassment. We're going to have Maxine Waters as part of the House Finance Committee. And so President Trump said yesterday, the stock market is being hurt by the prospect of Democratic lawmakers harassing him. Of course, they're going to, if they do anything, they're going to raise taxes and regulation. But for the most part, they're not going to do anything other than try to come after President Trump. He understands that. They know that. The stock market knows that. It's also part of the peak tech industry, I think, tech stocks. Apple is sliding. One of its facial recognition suppliers cut its outlook, hinting at weak iPhone orders. Exactly right. They have been, everybody's got a smartphone. Everybody's got more than one smartphone. How many more of these things do we need? They're not innovating anymore. You got people like Tim Cook. He is not interested in creating products. He is interested in controlling your speech. That's what he's interested in. They don't do any innovation. None whatsoever. Folks, the only bright spot in the global economy has been America because of the regulation cuts, because of the tax cuts by President Trump. The only bright spot in the global economy. There are massive forces out there ready to crash us into a global depression. This one, for example, the nightmare scenario for Beijing. 50 million Chinese apartments are empty. 50 million Chinese apartments are empty. Let me say that one more time. 50 million Chinese apartments are empty. Can you imagine how big that is? It is the housing bubble of China. See, the housing bubble that crashed the world economy back in 2008 is even bigger today. Our leveraged debt globally is even bigger than it was 10 years ago. And it is coming out of China. That when it crashes in China, that is going to be felt around the world. And all the Democrats want to do is destroy President Trump. Nobody says anything about the Chinese. Nobody says anything about their designs on power, about their economic system, because they are the tool of the globalists. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. Let's take a look at the election that continues. There are continuing elections because the Democrats are still voting. And they will continue to vote for at least another couple of weeks in Florida and Georgia. They're finished voting, however, in Arizona because they got the result that they wanted. Go back to last week when the rest of us had an election. Democrats, though, weren't finished. You had Kyrsten Sinema in Arizona, as of last Thursday, took the lead for the first time. McSally was leading Sinema on Tuesday night, on election night. She continued to lead Sinema throughout Wednesday and throughout most of Thursday, but the Democrats just keep voting. And by Thursday, Sinema had pulled ahead by a few thousand votes. And so this article here that I've got going back to last Thursday, at that point, she was leading McSally by 0.5%. But officials are not counting ballots in Arizona. They said a state where 75% of the ballots were cast by mail. Well, then you just hold the rest of the ballots and you don't report them until you get all the ballots in. And then you tell everybody what it is. I don't know if I trust that. Or not. No, I'm just being sarcastic. I know I don't trust that. I know I don't. And so then now we get to today, or yesterday, I should say, yesterday evening. She was pronounced the winner. It took nearly a week for the Democrats to add additional votes, but they finally got there. And now Democrat Kyrsten Sinema is the new senator to replace Jeff Flake. You thought Flake was bad. Sinema has portrayed herself as a moderate. A moderate. What a lie. I don't know what the bigger lie is, her election vote total or her portraying herself as a moderate. She rose to prominence as an openly bisexual Green Party activist in Phoenix. As I told you, she got more money from Zero Population Growth Political Action Committee than any other candidate. She hates families. She hates stay-at-home moms. She calls them leeches. Yeah, this is the new senator from Arizona, who will be interfering in your lives and in your family's lives from Washington, D.C. now, not confined to Arizona. Democrats now have total control of New York government. Total control of the New York government. You thought that they didn't have total control before? Well, it's going to be even worse. And the people at the New York Post are not happy about it. They said the last time Democrats were in complete control in 2009 and 2010, it proved to be a disaster. They said the Democratic conference in the Senate was riven by ethnic and racial division. Who would imagine that a political party that comes to power using ethnic and racial division would suffer from ethnic and racial division within itself, right? A house divided against itself cannot stand. They don't look for common ground. You can't be with the Black Lives Matter people if you think that there's something that needs to be done about police misconduct in particular. You're not allowed there unless you're black. You know, we got to have these ethnic and racial divisions, even within these little movements. They can't agree about anything. They can't come together and work together on anything. And as the New York Post points out, back in 2009, 2010, it pulled them apart. Amid the chaos, two Democrats, Pedro Espada and Hiram Montserrat, staged a coup. And they temporarily gave Republicans control. How'd that happen? The divided Democrat House, divided against itself, could not stand. Then Montserrat flipped again, and the chamber was in a paralyzing 31-31 split, and chaos resulted. Things like the law giving New York City mayors authority to run their school system was briefly allowed to lapse. Oh, what are we going to do about that? Maybe that was a positive side effect. Four of the top Senate Democrat leaders, when that was the case, when the Democrats controlled everything in New York, were subsequently convicted of crimes, and a fifth was expelled after being convicted of domestic violence. Oh, sounds kind of like Keith Ellison. All right, we'll be right back. Stay with us.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, The David Knight Show.
Welcome back. So not only do Democrats have total control of New York government, I mean, they've got not just New York City. They have the State House, the State Senate, every branch of state government, the governorship, so we're all Democrat. Just watch what's going to happen. And turn it into Detroit. It's already well on the way. And now Democrats have gained a veto-proof majority in California legislature. You know, they're still not finished counting votes in California, you know, because Democrats. Tens of thousands of votes remain to be counted after Election Day, a week after Election Day. They said Democrats have won two Republican-held California state Senate seats, giving the party veto-proof supermajorities in both chambers of the legislature. That means that with two-third majority, Democrats can raise taxes. They can suspend legislative rules. Yeah, they don't like taxes. They don't like rules. They love taxes, I should say. Always want to raise taxes, but they hate rules. And they can override anything that the Republicans want to do. And, of course, when they say that they're going to be able to override vetoes, I wonder what in the world they would do that would be more radical than Governor-elect Gavin Newsom. I mean, what in the world could they possibly veto, or would he veto, that they would do? I would think that he would be to the left even of that Democrat body. But who knows? Who knows? Latinos could turn Texas blue in 2020 if enthusiasm holds, say some. That's what the Dallas News is saying. The Dallas News wants that to be the case. They said Democrats won 12 Texas House seats, including 5 in Dallas, and they unseated 2 North Texas Republican state senators. They said over the next 10 years, 2 million Latinos will turn 18 in Texas, and about 95% of them will be eligible to vote. So the question is, will the border hold? I don't know. It's really an existential question. Not just for President Trump, who is already in a lot of trouble as they were not able to hold the line on the Democrat House. It is going to be continual war. They're going to find anything. And if they don't find anything to impeach him over, and if they don't find anything, they'll make it up. They've already said as much. And so it's going to be even worse if he doesn't get control of the border. Because these people are bringing in foreign voters. As I pointed out last week, I was talking about the fact that they had spent over $6,300 a vote to register 49 undocumented voters. They spent over $300,000 in San Francisco to try to get foreign citizens to vote in their elections. Only 49 of them showed up to vote. So that means the Democrats spent about $6,300 to get 49 votes. $6,300 a piece to get 49 votes. we've got a computer algorithm now for the first time is going to decide a race, a second congressional district race in Maine. So it has 13 House seats remain undecided. A computer recount is deciding Maine's second congressional district. It's the first time that you've had a situation with ranked choice. And quite frankly, I don't have a problem with ranked choice. I think it's a fairly good idea. I have a problem with computer algorithms running elections because there's no transparency. There's typically no record. That's the situation here in Texas as the supervisor of elections tells everybody. This is a guy who worked at the Rose Law Firm. Does that sound familiar? Back in Arkansas, Hillary Clinton's law firm. He left Texas, went there for a short period of time, then got hired back here by Rick Perry. And since he came back to Texas, he's been telling all the different county boards of election, don't save the images for your electronic vote. Don't save any of that stuff. That makes it impossible to go back and audit an election to see whether or not it's honest. And as I began to say earlier, I forgot to finish it up, when you look at whether or not an election is dishonest, and of course, there's been a lot of concern about this, Smartmatic is one of the bigger electronic voting machine companies. They have since been bought and sold several times. And now they're under a different name. You don't have a Smartmatic company anymore. And they're not the biggest anymore. But they were for a while the biggest. And they were the first. And they were started by Hugo Chavez in Venezuela to rig the election for him. Now, that should tell you something. And then they were accused of being involved in election rigging throughout Central and South America, in the Philippines and so forth. Brazil was a famous example of that, where they had polls before the election showing Dilma Rousseff, I think is how you pronounce her name. It was the communist female leader of Brazil that was the president before this guy just got in, Bolsonaro, who is a conservative, of course. That means that the press here calls him a Nazi. A Nazi doesn't expand the capability of individuals to own firearms. He is not a dictator. He is not a Nazi. He wouldn't be doing that if he was. That's just an attack on him because they don't like his conservative beliefs, because he agrees with President Trump on nationalism and so forth and on letting people be able to defend themselves against exploding crime rates, especially in Rio de Janeiro. Nevertheless, before him, you had a couple of communists. They called themselves socialists, but they were communists. And they were just as corrupt as Hillary Clinton, except that they went to jail. One of the individuals was trying to run for office from jail. The other one, a female, had been lagging severely in the polls just before the election. And to underscore those polls were correct, she went to a massive soccer game. And she was booed out of the stadium. But then, the next day, she wins the election. The early returns are showing her losing by a significant margin. And then all the machines go down. And then the machines come back and she's winning by that significant margin. Nothing to see there, right? They have exit polls that are taken. One organization takes all the exit polls in Brazil, just like they do here in the United States. They do it as a pool service. And they shut down and wouldn't tell anybody what their exit polls were. See, that's what we need to do. In places where we believe that there is corruption and vote rigging, like in Florida, like in Palm Beach and so forth, we need to have exit polling there and not break it down and saying this many people of this race, this many people of this sex, this many people of this education and income level voted for this candidate. That don't break it down by the demographic crosstabs. Give us the total. Give us the total so that we can compare it. That's what the State Department does in foreign countries. I said, if the exit poll totals differ by more than 4% from the reported vote totals, it's a crooked election. And that's what we need to have. We need to have this. Maybe somebody could start this as a national movement. Conservatives could fund exit polling in these cities where they're still voting a week later. And we have exit polls in Palm Beach. And everybody says, yeah, what did you vote for? So forth. And then compare that. And of course, they're going to be in favor of Democrats. But we need to have something that's going to give us an idea of how many people voted. I mean, we've got a lot of jurisdictions, this report, even before the election, had more voters there than they did people living in the area. Now, everybody is talking about Beto O'Rourke. We got the Obama brothers, Crooked Media, they call themselves. Jon Favreau, co-founder of Crooked Media and others, are going to do a documentary about Beto O'Rourke. He's not done yet. The Irishman. And as I said before, he needs to rebrand himself. It didn't work enough for him to rebrand himself as a Latino, you know, the Irishman. So he needs to try something else. He needs to be a little bit more bold. And this time he needs to call himself a woman. He needs to have a transition period. He can run as Betty. Just put that on all the signs. And why not? I mean, we've got a Dutch man telling the court that he wants to change his age from 69 to 49. He identifies, the 69-year-old man in Holland, in the Netherlands, identifies as a 49-year-old. He wants to get on online dating services, and, he compared his situation to those of transgenders. He said, transgenders, they can identify as a different sex. Why can't I identify as a different age? You got Beto, who identifies as a different ethnic group for political purposes. Why can't Beto also identify as a another sex? Or maybe Beto goes the other way. Maybe he wants to have more gravitas. So maybe he wants to identify as a 69-year-old.
The greetings of people in trouble, reflections of my life. Oh, how they fill my eyes.
Welcome back. I've got a lot of interesting news that I think puts things into context, some other issues, besides going a little, I'm not going to go as deep into the rigging of what's happened in Florida and Georgia. We understand what's going on. It's important to talk about this, and we have talked about it at length. I want to give you some perspective on some other things. Before I do, real quickly, I want to tell you about the sales we have at InfoWarsStore.com, because that's what funds this program. We have a blowout special, 67% off of Silver Bullet, our colloidal silver. And again, colloidal silver is for internal use, to fight bacteria, virus, and so forth. We also have other products that have nano silver, which is really for topical use. We have the nano silver salve. We also have the Super Blue fluoride-free toothpaste that doesn't have fluoride, but it's got the good halogen iodine, and it's got nano silver in it. So all of those are things that silver is very effective at fighting bacteria and virus. And, of course, you can get Silver Bullet, the colloidal silver, for internal use. You can get that now 67% off with free shipping. We have free shipping store-wide right now. It's part of our blowout sale. We have 57% off of Super Male Vitality. We have 50% off Brain Force Plus and Survival Shield X3 Nascent Iodine. We also have nearly 50% off of the big Alexa Pure water filter. The Alexa Pure Pro is now just $127. That's a savings of $123 off of the regular price. And again, it is a gravity feed water filter, so you don't need to have power in order for that to work. You can use it if you have an emergency. But make sure that you, what you really need it for is not for the occasional hurricane or something like that, or power outage that's going to come through. It's for the kind of emergency that you typically don't find out about until after the fact. If there's something that has contaminated your water supply, whether you're on a well or whether you're on city water, you don't know what is in your water. You can't have it constantly tested, so you need to have it constantly filtered. You never know if it's going to be some kind of a bacteria in the water or if you're going to have some spill that's gotten into your water supply, if you're on a groundwater, or just mismanagement, as we've seen over and over again from municipal water systems like Flint, Michigan. Nobody knew that their kids were getting poisoned with lead until they started seeing the symptoms in their children, and then it was too late. And we've had situations where you've had underground storage tanks associated with business or industry, or glyphosate runoff from agricultural interests. It's known by the local officials. They know about it in some cases for 6 or 7 years. And it isn't until they start going public with cancer clusters that they get interested in telling the people about it. By that time, it's too late. You've already lost family members. So always be proactive with your water filter. This is one way you can do it, and you can save $123 right now off the Alexa Pure Pro. And as a final special, we have something just for our listeners here. You can save $10 off of the new InfoWars Hexagon Polo. That's the golf shirt with the hexagon logo. You can save $10. Just enter the code REALNEWS at checkout, and you can save $10 off of that InfoWars golf shirt with the new hexagon logo. All that's at InfoWarsStore.com. Early in the program, as I was doing the news break at the top of the program, I told you about the guy who was touring, the guitarist who was touring, and he offended Facebook by putting up a picture of himself wearing a MAGA cap and a I voted sticker, and he had Chick-fil-A in his hand. And Facebook suspended him for 24 hours. Said, we don't like that. Can't have that. Isn't that amazing? What is offensive about that? And then it got worse. Because of that, he was thrown off of the tour. He got a call from his agent in California, said, you're off the tour. And he's trying to get an answer from the guy who's run the tour, former guitarist of ZZ Top. Won't give him a reason, but we know what the reason is. I mean, they won't give you a reason on Facebook typically. They did give him a reason on this. They said it was for that. He knows that's what it's for. So you can't put that up, but you can do this if you're Antifa. You can not only go after Tucker Carlson when that gets tiresome, as the Western Journal points out. You know, you can only do that so many times. You can only attack Tucker Carlson at his home so many times, and eventually the police get involved. So what is an Antifa group to do, you know, for entertainment and giggles? Well, you can attack the American flag at a pizzeria in New York, New Paltz, New York. They have an American flag mural, and that got vandalized on Election Day. So that's okay. That's okay. Nobody's bad when you do something like that. This guy just votes, has a MAGA cap, and Chick-fil-A in his hand, and he gets hammered. He gets fired. He gets censored by Facebook, then he gets fired by his tour. But nothing happens to these people. The owner of this pizzeria, it's La Bella Pizza Bistro in the Hudson Valley town of New Paltz, New York, said she had initially faced some opposition to the American flag mural when it was proposed because critics said the flag represented a symbol of hate and oppression. And they decided that it still represented hate and oppression, so they went back on Election Day and they defaced it. She now has a GoFundMe page to redo the mural. Camille Paglia had a comment, I think it was on the Drudge Report. Social justice, she said, has now become a pseudo-religion. She's absolutely right. You know, there's a lot of religions out there that don't portray themselves as religions. Secular humanism, for example, is a religion, and its gods are fiercely worshipped. But social justice and all the political correctness stuff where you, you know, anything that anybody is offended by can be shut down. That is a tyranny of a minority, a tiny minority. One person gets offended. As I was pointing out a couple of weeks ago, one person got offended at Disney's Aladdin play in a school, and so they shut the whole thing down. Oh, it portrays Arabs as being nasty people or something. Yeah, it does. But everybody in the play is Arab. I mean, Aladdin is Arab. The princess is Arab. The villain is Arab. The genie is Arab. I mean, everybody there. So, yeah, you can find some character there that is negative because, you know, it's about that. But it doesn't portray the culture in a negative light. It takes some tropes from Arabic culture and from, you know, age-old stories that we're not allowed to talk about anymore because somebody might be offended by that. But she said social justice has become a pseudo-religion. And, of course, the key factor about social justice is thou shalt not offend. And offense is in the eye and the ear of the offendee. She said, as an atheist, I have argued that if religion is erased, something must be put in its place. Belief systems are intrinsic to human intelligence and to survival. They frame the flux of primary experience, which would otherwise flood the mind. Let me put it this way. You're going to worship you're going to serve somebody, right? That's the way Bob Dylan put it. You're going to serve somebody. There's going to be somebody on the throne. You're going to have a system. You know, we're not legislating morality, but morality influences our legislation. What morality do we have? Do we have any morality? What is the basis of our society? It used to be Christianity. When we said we had a Christian nation, that didn't mean that all of our leaders were Christian. It didn't mean that all the people were Christians. It meant that they organized things along Christian lines, even if they themselves were deists, non-Christians.
Of deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I was just talking about Camille Paglia saying that social justice has become a pseudo-religion. Yes, it is. Along with environmentalism, these are the things that are taught to children in our government school system as they have consolidated the curriculum and the control into one central location into Washington. This is the danger of the Department of Education. The Department of Education needs to be shut down. This is a problem that conservatives and the Republican Party don't really grasp the extent of. Common Core is a symptom of a bigger problem. And if you just get rid of Common Core, or you stop it, or you delay it, or whatever, that doesn't do anything other than delay more expansive brainwashing of our children into this socialist globalist agenda, whatever it is that they want to use. They will continue on with that if we leave that structure there. And this is the key problem with what I see happening in the Trump administration. There have been some great moves within the Trump administration. For example, the EPA, one of the best department heads that President Trump had was Scott Pruitt. That's why they drove him out of Washington. He got some great things done at the EPA. Unfortunately, as soon as Scott Pruitt leaves, the reforms stop. And as soon as President Trump leaves, the reforms will be reversed because the EPA remains. And we need to get rid of it. There is no authority in the Constitution for the EPA. There's no authority for the DEA. There's no authority for the FDA. There's no authority for most of these agencies, especially the new ones that were newly created. You know, the EPA was created by Richard Nixon. The Department of Education was created by Jimmy Carter. And Ronald Reagan campaigned on getting rid of the Department of Education. He didn't do it. He grew it. As I've said many times, he grew it from Rosemary's Baby into adulthood. And the way that it is being used, the weaponized way that it is being used, you saw Obama threatening to withhold Title IX funding from schools if they didn't have co-ed dressing rooms, co-ed showers, co-ed bathrooms to push the transgender agenda. And so what they have been doing in the past, their agenda in the past, was first of all environmentalism. Because environmentalism creates a, if you believe the idea of man-made global warming because of our energy use, and let's understand that there is man-made climate change. It's called geoengineering. The Chinese are admitting it. The Western nations won't, even though they signed a climate manipulation. You know, we will not use climate as a weapon against each other way back in the early 70s. You had Lyndon Johnson handing out awards to a guy who had manipulated the weather for the Vietnam War and so forth. Well, that doesn't happen. That's a conspiracy theory. There is no geoengineering going on. None whatsoever. And then they have annual climate geoengineering conferences where they say, well, the real question is, who gets to set the thermostat? You know, some people in a more southern climate, maybe they want a cooler climate. Maybe the people in the northern climate, maybe they want more warming or whatever. So there's going to be, you know, it isn't an issue whether or not they're going to adjust the climate or whether they can or whether they are. But who's going to set it to what temperature? You know, it's kind of like the fight that you and your wife have at home. Or the fight that Cynthia Nixon had with Cuomo. Who sets the thermostat here in this debate? You know, you're trying to freeze me out. That's what men always do. They always set the thermostat too low. Well, that's what's going on. Isn't a question of whether or not you got an HVAC unit. The question of who's going to control a thermostat. But they want to use global warming as a uncontrolled problem. It's there because we use energy, they say. And so we have to control energy usage, which controls our wealth and our lifestyle and everything about us. It also creates a need for a global tax, which can fund a global government, which can create a global army along the lines of the European Union's EU, because it's about power. It's about empire. They want a global empire. They want global power. And so they have to have a global problem. So for the longest time, they've been pushing that narrative. They've done a pretty good job. Most kids, after they've gone through this brainwashing from kindergarten on up, they believe in man-made climate change. They don't believe in geoengineering, but they believe that we're doing it by accident and neglect. And then the next thing, after they started that, they started the agenda of political correctness and those who are perpetually offended. And of course, that means that if anybody is offended, then your freedom of speech, your free exercise of religion has to be stopped because it offends somebody. And they can use that as a massive weapon of social control, which is the way that it's being used. Now, the next agenda that is just now beginning in the schools, even though Camille Paglia is talking about the adverse effects of the social justice religion, you know, the environmental religion is gone, the social justice religion is gone. Now we have the transgender religion that is being pushed on kids. What is the purpose of that? Well, the purpose of that is to pretend that kids in kindergarten can consent to sex because they can determine what gender they are even before they reach puberty, even before any hormones kick in. They can start to have hormone therapy paid for by the state government in California. They'll pay for it. Before the kid reaches puberty, they'll start giving them hormones of a different biological sex. And this is another thing that they can use to reduce the population. So it's reduce the population, you know, create a playground for pedophiles to create this brave new world where we sit around not contemplating our navels, but our genitals to try to figure out what we are, then pretending that that doesn't matter. It's all in your mind anyway, right? But this is what Camille Paglia has to say. She says, as an atheist, she says, if religion is race, something has to be put in its place. There's going to be a vacuum there. We need to have a context with which to understand our place in life. It's called a myth. You know, Joseph Campbell talked about it, the power of myth. And C.S. Lewis talked about it. He said, Christianity is the true myth. He says it's true. It's not made up. It's true. But it gives us an epic story that defines our place in life, our place in the universe. We're all looking for something. You know, Hillary Clinton came here to, I think it was here in Austin years ago, years before I came here. She talked about the politics of meaning. Trying to find meaning in politics is as useless as being with her. It's idiotic. You're not going to find any meaning in life following Hillary Clinton's coattails around, her pantsuit tails around. You're not going to find any meaning to life in politics. And this is what Camille Paglia is saying. She said, but politics cannot fill the gap. Society, with which Marxism is obsessed, and this is why, folks, it is cultural Marxism. All this political correctness, it's being used to intimidate and to control people. You control their speech because you want to control people. And Marxism is materialist. And they are obsessed with materialism. They're obsessed with controlling people. And as Camille Paglia, an atheist, points out, Marxism is obsessed with society. But society, she said, is only a fragment of the totality of life. As I have written, Marxism has no metaphysics. It cannot even detect, much less comprehend, the enormity of the universe and the operations of nature. Exactly. As one Christian philosopher said, when the scientists get to the mountain and trying to figure out what the meaning of life is, they'll find philosophers and theologians at the top. It doesn't have, in terms of the physical, it does not explain the metaphysical. She says, infantile rage suffered by those who have turned fallible politicians into saviors and devils, godlike avatars of good versus evil. This is what we're seeing, and this is part of the generational turning. But this worship, this idolatry of politics and of politicians is something that's dangerous, and I think it's dangerous on the right as well. But far more dangerous, far more evident with the left. We have to guard against this on the right. Trust no man who approaches liberty. Guard it like a precious jewel. Cover, and I also want to get one more statement from Camille Paglia. She disagrees with us on many things, but I think she's a very, very insightful person. And what she has to say about the Me Too movement is absolutely amazing. And I want to talk a little bit about some government action pouring bleach on homeless people. I had a charity that was feeding homeless people, and the government shows up and it's like, we didn't approve that. And they pour bleach on the food. That's your government at work. That's your government at work. Some interesting news here in this last segment. Before we do, real quickly, I just want to remind you again of the big sale that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. Free shipping store-wide. We have some products like colloidal silver, our silver bullet product, 67% off, 57% off Super Male Vitality, 50% off Brain Force Plus and Survival Shield X3 Nascent Iodine. Again, free shipping store-wide. We have $123 off the Alexa Pure Pro Gravity Feed Water Filter, the big one. And for listeners of this program, as an exclusive for this program, we have the a $10 discount off of the new InfoWars Hexagon Polo. You can save $10. Just use the code REALNEWS at checkout, and you can save $10 off the InfoWars new golf shirt, and that is with the new Hexagon logo. And again, free shipping store-wide at InfoWarsStore.com. We really do appreciate your support. And I just have to mention this story, too. The woman at her divorce party blowing up her wedding dress. And she wears I'm not with stupid. Oh, no, she's not with stupid. She is stupid. She used 20 pounds of Tannerite to blow up her wedding dress. She was 200 yards away. Fortunately, it was just material. If you ever seen any pictures of people playing around with Tannerite, my sons did it responsibly. They used maybe about 2 or 3 pounds of Tannerite to blow up a dead tree that we wanted to get rid of, just as for fun. But you really have to be careful when you explode that, even from a distance. Again, it's an inert explosive that gets triggered by high velocity bullets. But it can be very potent. If you use 20 pounds of it, you have no idea what you're doing. You aren't with stupid. You are stupid. And, when it blew up that tree, we got a lot of complaints from neighbors, although it was done very safely. But I've seen pictures of people putting tannerite, let's say, on something like an automobile to blow it up. And it sends metal pieces flinging in every direction. And you've had people killed. You've had people get their leg cut off from flying debris, shrapnel, from that explosion. Yeah, I mean, it's a real explosion. And she blows up her wedding dress. Had 40 guests in attendance. A town about 25 miles west of San Antonio. They said they heard the explosion 15 miles away, is rattling windows and so forth. Yeah, that's pretty stupid. But let's talk about something else stupid. The Me Too movement, which has kind of blown up our our society. Camille Paglia said the headlong rush to judgment by so many well-educated middle-class women in the Me Too movement has been startling and dismaying. She said their elevation of emotion and group solidarity over fact and logic. Oh, that's so good. That's a Camille Paglia, so good. Their elevation of emotion and group solidarity over fact and logic has resurrected damaging stereotypes of women's irrationality that were once used to deny us the vote. Yeah, they're hysterical. Remember, hysterical, that comes from women irrational. I call them hysterical. And so she says, you're playing into the stereotype of hysterical women. Because you're using your group identity over reason, over logic. She is a self-identified feminist. And she says, this is insane. We also have talking about the vacuum in our society of religion, though. Vladimir Putin understands this. And it's kind of interesting. After I saw that article from Camille Paglia saying, you know, as we have purged religion out of our society, and by that she means Christianity, we don't have a moral framework anymore. Well, what does it mean? You know, what is a moral framework, for example, for war? I was talking about that earlier. You know, we had a moral framework for war that was based on Christian principles. It was reflected in our Constitution to a degree. I mean, we would have this debate on whether or not the war was justified. But there were broader principles involved in it. The just war principles said that you're not going to go to war unless you have been had aggression. Somebody has crossed the border into your country and so forth. And once you do it, you're going to try to minimize the damage to people. You're going to try to avoid any civilians, which is not the way that Islamic cultures wage war, right? They don't try to avoid harming civilians. As a matter of fact, they go after civilians because they're soft targets. And they want to terrorize them. We go out of our way to try to avoid hitting civilians. As a matter of fact, it puts us on an unequal footing when we're fighting Islamic terrorists because they say, oh, they're in a mosque or they're not dressed in uniforms. They can't identify them from the general population. So don't shoot. If they're not shooting at you, you can't shoot. So they walk out, they take a couple of shots at American troops and they put the rifle down, they walk away and you can't shoot them, right? Under rules of engagement from Obama. Makes it very difficult to understand what's going on. That's why in Western civilization, all the troops were wearing uniforms so you could identify them from the civilian population and try to avoid hurting innocent people. Once you were in a position of superiority, you tried to minimize that damage. And so just like when somebody breaks into your house, if they're coming at you to harm you or somebody in your family, you are justified to use force. But if they just grab your television set at some point and they're running off with your television set, you're not allowed to shoot them in the back because we value human life. Those are Christian values that have disappeared. So as Vladimir Putin is trying to resurrect Russia from the ruins of Marxism and Stalinism, one of the things he's trying to do is establish a unifying framework for them, just as Camille Paglia is talking about. Well, what's he doing? He's turning back to Christianity, to the Russian Orthodox Church. The Russian military is going to build a military church to try to bolster spiritual values in its armed forces. And they're going to, some people have called it the cocky temple because of the colors that they're doing this thing in, making it look like it's military. But still, it is exactly the opposite of what we're doing in this country, where we're purging out of the U.S. Air Force Academy and other places, purging any Christianity, actively purging it out of our military. We need to think about what's going on here, folks. Christians especially, you understand that the spiritual is over and above the material. The spiritual created the material. The spiritual rules the material. And God is not mocked. We ban God out of our, establish our military academies. We ban him out of our society. You know, it's kind of interesting as we look at these fires, one of the stories that really caught my attention was this Westworld set. Now, they don't make movie sets to be very fireproof. You know, they're thrown up very quickly. People aren't living in them. I don't know if they even have any fire code stuff. So I had a fire go through that area, burn down every single thing in that set, except for the church. Church is untouched. You see things like that happening from time to time. Maybe that's a message to California. And I tell you what, it's like we can talk about all the different things. Is it directed energy beams? Is it geoengineering causing droughts? Is it bad management and so forth? There are probably all of those things involved. I think there's also a spiritual dimension here. You better get that message here. When we look at situations like this, Asia Bibi, the Pakistani Christian who was facing a death sentence, spent years on death row simply because she got a drink of water. She was called unclean by her Islamic neighbors, and they got her for a charge of blasphemy. They're having riots throughout the cities of Pakistan because she was let off and not executed, but she's still in that country. They're concerned that the Muslims are going to find her, that they're going to execute her. She tried to get, she appealed to Britain to have them accept her as a refugee. Britain refused. And now she's appealing to the United States. I fully expect President Trump to offer her clemency. I've only got 45 seconds. I've got to say, when you think about government, and you think that government is going to help you, remember George Washington told us, government is not compassion, it is not reason, it is force. And like fire, it is a fearful servant and a dreadful master. Nothing drives us home more so than this article from Free Thought Project. The government shows up at a place where they are feeding homeless people. They're doing it just privately. You know, I'm very proud of my daughter. She does that on a weekly basis. She volunteers to do that. The government shows up at this particular place in Kansas City and says, hey, this free soup kitchen, you didn't get a permit for it. They pour bleach over the food rather than letting the homeless people have it. That's what government does.